Thank you, everybody. Good afternoon. I'd like to start off by acknowledging my co-authors, Dr. Ian van Wessenbeek from Dow AgroSciences, and also Tim Negley, my modeling colleague from Arcadis in Syracuse. I'd like to start off by talking about acetyclovir a little bit, to provide you some background on acetyclovir, on the actual product that we looked at here, its label. I'll then move on to the objective of this project. Then our approach, which was to parameterize our groundwater model with the GIS data that we assimilated. I'll touch on some of the historical environmental monitoring data that we generated on acetyclovir that has been generated. I'll then touch on the actual GIS and the computer modeling work that we conducted, and then wrap up with some conclusions. Okay, acetyclovir. Acetyclovir belongs to the class of acid annelids. It's a selective herbicide, has quite a short half-life in the order of 1 to 3 weeks in the field. It's used primarily to control grasses and broadleaf weeds in corn and other crops. It's normally applied just before or just after the corn emerges in the spring. It has a wide registration in the United States, but it's also sold in other countries too. The majority of the sales within the US are obviously in areas where corn planting is at its highest and has the greatest intensity. Back in 1995, when acetyclovir was registered, there were a number of restrictions that were placed on the sale of acetyclovir, and specifically the label was required to have some soil restrictions. This was effectively known as the 3-2-1 label. And really what that meant was that acetyclovir could not be used on sandy soils, less than 3% organic matter, loamy sands, less than 2% organic matter, sandy loams, less than 1% organic matter, where in all those cases, depth to groundwater was estimated to be less than 30 feet. Those areas on this US map are shown in orange. For those areas, there were detailed mapping that was made available to growers to enable them to walk through this label restriction and kind of advise them with some stewardship information. Okay, the objective of this project was basically to gather our field data, pull together our GIS information, and then actually conduct some groundwater modelling to determine the leaching potential of acetyclovir in some of these new the historically off-label areas. We were looking at acetyclovir and its two main breakdown products, acetyclovir sulfonic acid and acetyclovir oxalic acid. And we did basically long-term modeling when we were looking at three different crops, corn, cotton, and soybeans. In all these cases, we were looking at coarse texture soils with low organic matter content. In addition to the actual groundwater predictions, we looked at the efficacy of well setback distances, varying from 50 to 100 to 150 feet from the treated area. Okay, our actual approach. First of all, we evaluated the existing monitoring data that had been collected both by industry and also by regulatory bodies. Then we used GIS to essentially target vulnerable locations in the US for modeling. Essentially locations where those sandy loams, loamy sands, and sands with low organic matter intersected. And then we developed our modeling scenarios, in total 45 individual scenarios that were compiled into a batch run. And then we looked at each of those three individual well setback distances. Okay, to touch a little bit on the environmental monitoring, in terms of this product, acetyclovir, the information out there is very extensive. There's been a lot of work that's been conducted by registrants as well as regulatory authorities. In terms of the most extensive data set, there are 8 groundwater monitoring studies that were conducted across the Midwest, as well as another 175 well monitoring program that was placed in principal corn growing states in the Midwest. The results from those programs demonstrated really that acetyclovir, if used under labeled conditions, was unlikely to leach to groundwater. There were only a few very low-level detections that were observed, And I'll kind of draw your attention here to the detection here of 0.06 ppb, which was the maximum detection of acetachlor that was observed in what is called the prospective groundwater monitoring program that was run on acetachlor. Okay, moving on to the GIS evaluation. We identified an area in the southern coastal plain, in Wayne County specifically, where there was a high proportion of these sands, loamy sands and sandy loams with low organic matter, where all the soil groups essentially within that county were hydrologic group soil A and B. Another benefit was that Wayne County was adjacent to Pitt County, which was an already existing US EPA surface water scenario location. We effectively downloaded and accessed all the Surgo data from pretty much the whole East Coast plain, and we run that through a batch program, and out popped pretty much Wayne County at the top as the area that we should look at in terms of modeling. In addition, another requirement was that we wanted to look in areas where we knew that there was glyphosate-resistant Palmer amaranth present. Okay, to talk about the actual groundwater modeling, we just had a presentation that actually touched on PRISM. This is an extension of that. This is PRISM groundwater, and really what this is the new or soon to be released US EPA and Canadian Regulatory Authority Tier 2 sort of predictive model for estimating concentrations in groundwater of pesticides. We use it, as I said, to model three cropping scenarios, corn, cotton, and soybeans. Again, for that mix of soil textures that I mentioned, we looked at three analytes specifically, acetachlor and the two breakdown products. And then in terms of a use pattern, we looked at a number of different application rates and timing. We had a pre-emergence rate on corn, which was at the full rate of 2.25 pounds per acre, and then at a half rate of 1.125 pounds per acre, and then a post-emergent rate on both corn, cotton, and soybeans at the reduced rate only. Now, the model was parameterized to stop any runoff. So basically, we were pushing any water input to infiltrate rather than to run off these soils. This schematic is actually a US EPA schematic over here that comes from the N-methyl carbamide risk assessment that was conducted using this model and sort of shows a cross-section of the processes that are involved. Oh, I've lost the mouse. Shows a cross-section of how the model works here. The model determines the concentration here in a potable well that is located adjacent to a treated field. We did not consider any groundwater dilution in this model. Effectively, the well screen intake is in the top 1 meter of the water table, so basically vulnerable and conservative. Okay, to talk about the well setbacks, there were three well setbacks that were evaluated. We used a simple piston flow type model for that process, and we actually used two groundwater velocities in the determination. We used a median value of 0.02 meters per day. That was taken from groundwater studies that have been conducted on data submitted to the EPA. That was our median sort of groundwater flow speed. And then we did a high-end groundwater flow speed of 0.15 meters per day. And that was taken from actually US EPA data, again on the N-methyl carbamide risk assessment. Okay, I hear the results. If you bear with me from top to bottom, we have the parent acetachlor, then the sulfonic acid, and then the oxalic acid. And then going from left to right, as you see it, you have the zero setback, and then 50, 100, and 150 feet setback distances. Basically, with both the median groundwater flow velocity data as well as the high-end groundwater flow velocity, we did see a reduction in the concentrations predicted both for acetachlor sulfonic acid, and also for acetachlor oxalic acid. There were greater reductions observed for the slower moving groundwater, and that is because there was greater time for degradation within the groundwater for the analyze to basically degrade and dissipate. With the faster flowing water, those reductions were less, but were still marked. Okay, well, as a result of the work that was conducted and the GIS data that was used to parameterize the model, the actual label for acetyclovir was modified. In scenarios now where you have groundwater greater than 30 feet and you have wells further than 150 feet away from the treaty field, there is no issue. The only area you have to focus on now is basically if you are less than 30 feet and you have sands, loamy sands and sandy loams, you basically cannot apply the product if you have a potable well with 150 feet of that treated area. Okay, so in conclusion, I have a few here. First of all, the use of the GIS data, the Sergo data, and the high resolution data that we got from Sergo was instrumental in the model parameterization. We were able to identify a highly vulnerable geographic location for modeling. And although the model predictions were slightly higher than the measured concentrations back from the monitoring, they were still only, in terms of difference, they were only 2x difference between what was seen in the actual monitoring studies and that was actually seen in the modeling. Also, a point to note is that groundwater concentrations can actually be effectively reduced by well setback distances, as demonstrated by the data from this project. And even a modest well setback, perhaps 50 feet, is still effective at reducing the concentrations of analytes in groundwater predicted if they have sufficient residence time in groundwater. I'd like to wrap up here by acknowledging the acetyclovir registration partnership, which is a partnership between Dow AgroSciences and Monsanto Company for sponsoring this project, and also to the US EPA for providing us with a pre-release version of this PRISM groundwater model to actually do this assessment. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Andy. Any questions for Andy? Thank you very much. Thanks.